found this on Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's sick performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
Yay!
Yay! CBS are you is sure? raping us.
Are you sure you're Aaron O'Brien?
Yeah, I'm Aaron O'Brien.
You don't have another name that you're hiding?
Not tonight.
Not tonight?
Not tonight. I'm in full disclosure. We've got a war crime that we're going to talk about. For CBS.
Speaking of war crimes.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about war crimes. And this one is directed at CBS.
Oh, well, so CBS has come out with big, big happy news saying that the Netflix sale has funded Star Trek Discovery.
It's funded.
It's funded. But guess what? We still have to pay for it.
Yes.
According to CBS Corporation, Les Moonves, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's Moon, V-E-S, so Moonves.
So where are we getting wrong?
So Netflix has paid for the entire production budget of Star Trek Discovery. Netflix will begin airing the series outside of U.S. and Canada. I saw one of the headlines that says, Star Trek Discovery will air on Netflix, except for in two very unimportant countries, which was like...
America and Canada.
America and Canada.
Maybe they're two biggest markets.
The two most unimportant countries. So Netflix just took it off the table for the rest of the world. Basically, Star Trek is going to be CBS All Access for free. I think that means for them, not like...
Right.
Like CBS, it's free for CBS to make the show since they sold it to Netflix and everywhere in the world.
So not only are we paying for All Access, then if you want your commercial-free All Access, you have to pay extra even for that. So they are milking us.
The only solace I can find in this is if it's paid for, there should be no problem with a season two.
And maybe also as well, if that's the case, that maybe that they'll be like, next season we'll just release it to, you know, for free, and you won't have to pay for that. Like,
I guess it depends on how huge the Netflix audience is, and maybe how abysmal the All Access. I think it's all going to be a numbers game, because I mean, if they can double dip, they're going to keep double dipping.
Oh yeah.
You know, get the Netflix to pay for the season, and then, like, you know, take in what the measly Star Trek fans
right.
who are going to pay for it.
And maybe on top of that, after the first season, the second season's released, maybe they'll release first season for free.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it'll be on Netflix like a year later.
Yeah, yeah. Which, like, I mean, cool shows. Just that you could watch it if you wanted to watch it again for free.
Yeah, that would be kind of nice.
Because my plan is I'm going to watch all these things and I'm going to, like, cancel my subscription as soon as I... Because it's like I'm not, you know, having an extra charge and please... All the bills you have to pay, and you got to pay one extra thing.
Just for CBS.
CBS, and it's going to give you commercials.
And the only thing that I want to watch on CBS is Star Trek.
Yeah. It's not going
to
be.
I don't need to watch all six seasons of six versions of NCIS.
Yeah, no.
I'm like, no thanks. Sorry.
I know there's a huge demand for it out there. I don't understand why. I don't get
it. And their podcasts for those shows probably have way bigger listeners than we do.
I know. Is there podcasts out there? Or are they just old people?
No. There's podcasts on fonts. So, I mean, there's got to be podcasts. Yeah,
I'm sure there's podcasts, but I mean, like, there's a giant market for podcasts for Star Trek. Don't go look for them. Just stay here. It's fine.
Please.
Just listen to us.
We've got your backs. Don't leave us.
I'll be your friend. But, yeah.
I do accept friend requests on Facebook. Although, if you're a friend of a friend, I'm more likely to hit yes.
But
if you send me a message first, you know, tell me who you are.
But
I'm definitely more likely to say yes.
You're such a slut.
Yes. Legs wide open.
with my legs wide open. Yeah.
I know a song of the Nice Ice Baby. Oh, it's Creed.
It's probably worse, actually. All right.
I never liked Creed.
One more thing is, as we talked the last episode, how Brian Fuller is completely out, they said that this Akiva Goldman is the next guy who's going to be doing the producing and the production of the whole thing.
Brace yourselves, guys. He's got some great movies under his belt.
Wow.
Namely the Schumacher Batman films.
Yeah, Batman
Forever. And Batman and Robin.
I just want to... Batman and Robin. I know, it's pretty bad.
Time to chill out.
He did Lost in Space.
Yes, Arnold Schwarzenegger things. We can talk Arnold again.
But he did do other things. He was the writer for Beautiful Mind. He did iRobot. He did Cinderella Man.
So he's got not terrible things under his belt.
I Am Legend, Hancock, he was producer of that. So, I mean...
He's got some, you know...
I wonder if he was in the beginning, he was just...
Terrible to pretty good films under his belt.
Well, you know, like, you get your first couple jobs, no matter what you are, it's kind of the crap jobs, and then you start getting better and better jobs. Like, they start, it's like, okay, maybe you can handle it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, ideally, like, you think you get the work on Batman, you wouldn't think that'd be a crap job. I'm like, it's Batman. I mean, Batman's... He should be awesome.
He should be awesome, but those Schumacher films were pretty bad.
Oh, they were terrible.
Well, so...
Atrocities Against the Dark Knight.
Well, with atrocities in mind, let's get into our
Joel
main...
Joel Schumacher should be a new Batman villain.
Oh, yeah. He kills...
That'd be great.
He kills Batman.
Yeah, he kills Batman. He's the only person that can kill Batman.
I'm sure that's already been thought of, but it's a good idea, actually, Dave. It's very clever. So this episode, we were talking about Deep Space Nine episode Duet, which came out first season, episode 18, and it first aired in June 13th, 1993.
Good God, 1993.
I was a year out of high school.
I was 10.
Oh my God, shut up. This is a great episode. Me and Dave, before the show started, were just remarking how great the acting is, how great the story is.
I watched it twice today.
Yeah.
As of the recording, I watched it when I first got up, and I watched it right before Aaron got here.
So, yeah, and it's so much fun because it's so heavy and the story twists and turns. So it was really great to watch it. So just getting into it,
The guest star, you know, acting super solid, and I think the guest star, what's his name,
Harris Yulin.
Yeah, he like. If his performance wasn't as strong, I don't know if this episode would have been as good.
I agree.
Because so much of it hinges on his performance.
He was a great... And he's another one of those actors. He's been in movies. He's in tons of TV. You look at his IMDb page. It blows up. It's just every year he's involved in like 3 to 5 projects. So it's like he's never not act. I mean, even now, and he's very much an older gentleman now.
Oh, yeah. So, remember, I was 10 when this episode came out.
Yeah. So
probably I was probably 9 because it wasn't December yet.
Yeah.
I was born in 83. This was 93.
So far you've listened to this episode, you know that he'll respond to almost any Facebook friend request and his birth date, so
oops.
All right, so
well, we all know who old guy is. He's the same age as Will Wheaton, so I gotta just Google that and you know how old guy is.
Anyways, so the episode starts with at ops. We have a freighter coming in asking for docking permission, and while they're getting that docking permission, they mentioned that they have a sick passenger. The passenger has this thing called Kalanora syndrome, and Kira ears lights up, like, her shoulder pads light up. Oh, somebody's ready for some labor camps.
I've got to go worship a Bajoran who survived that. Oh, I've got to go lick their toes and
yeah. So
those riches.
So apparently, which we're not told right away, but so she asked Sisko if she can go down and meet the person because it's probably Bajoran who was in this labor camp. It's called the Gildetep labor camp, and there was like basically it was like Auschwitz.
It was just terrible.
It's a terrible scene. So,
dying.
And she was one of the people that helped liberate when she was in what is it called?
Her freedom fighter. The freedom fighter.
Shikara
Force,
yeah. Right. I was trying to search for the word. Sorry. Anyways, So she runs down there, and it is not a Bajoran.
She calls for Odo. Odo, come help me. And, I know we're not dating yet, but...
And as soon as she asks for Odo and security to come, the guy does
he bolts.
Yeah, he does a dine and dash. He's running out the door. And Bashir's like, what is going on? You know, this is my patient. Don't ever take a patient from my bed.
Well, treat him in his jail cell. Kira says.
He says he's a war criminal. So, and that's where we've like, what?
If only he had a Hitler mustache.
Yeah, I know. So the Cardassian man ends up being this guy called Maritza.
That's a cool name.
Maritza.
It sounds like he's like a mafia.
Yeah. Actually, it seems a little Jewish to me, but I don't know.
Jewish have got. I'm sure the Jews have mafias.
Oh, yeah. don't go against the Orthodox Jews, man. They'll make you pay. So anyways, this Maritza says, you know, so she was like, well, the only way you could have the Kalinora syndrome was if you were at this labor camp with all these war atrocities. So you must be implicated that you were part of this, you know.
Yeah.
You were part of this.
Proof. Although, like, scientifically, like, really, is this only one place in the entire galaxy?
I was a little confused on that. Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, for all the wonderfulness of this episode, I feel like that...
There's a few holes. Fishy. There's a few holes on this, which I think we could get into a little bit. But anyways,
it doesn't. Not to downplay the greatness of this episode, but it's like, what, really? Like only one place in that one mine?
Well, apparently there was some kind of mining disaster that released some kind of chemical or gas.
I just wonder if it was like a biological weapon that was down there that went off, and that's the only place where that was ever detonated. I mean, that would. To me, that would be the only thing that would really kind of...
Well, maybe it's...
If it was an artificial virus.
Maybe it's a certain element that was released that affects people's, you know, physiology a certain way, and that's why it's, you know, called that. So he lies immediately and says that it wasn't the Kalinora syndrome. He says it's a different syndrome.
That's got the same medication treatment and everything.
And so Bashir looks into that. So he just claims that he's just an innocent Cardassian traveler, and they're holding him for no reason. And
Gul Dukat, and Gul Dukat pretty much says the same thing.
Gul Dukat is hardly helpful until almost the very end of this whole episode. But
love Gul Dukat, though.
But oh yeah, yeah. So he holds. He's not giving him any information. And then we're also getting Sisko's also getting calls from the Bajoran homeworld. Says we heard you got a war
criminal.
You got
the bad guy. We're gonna give you a medal.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I'm not sure if this is a bad guy yet. Let's not jump to conclusions. And he's like,
we got a mat here.
Yeah,
and you jump. Conclusions.
Exactly.
Good old pliers.
Bringing back pliers. And anyway, so Sisko's in this precarious position that Kira is hell-bent that this guy is a war criminal and part of the labor camp that killed so many of the Bajorans. Sisko's got to play it kind of diplomatically because he doesn't know if that's true, because Kira sometimes comes off so half-cocked that you don't know if she's...
If she's thinking rationally or not.
Yeah. In fact, when he is in jail, there's another Bajoran on the opposite side of the jail cell.
Get me out of here.
Because he is a Cardassian. He's a Bajoran that was, like, the town drunk.
Yeah, he's the station drunk.
And
I wish you saw him more. Yeah. So we establish him as the station drunk.
Yeah, he is the town drunk.
It should have been Morn.
It would have been awesome. Morn probably just wouldn't yell, though.
No.
Just give him, like, glancing looks from across. But, and he didn't, so, I mean, it kind of set up the idea that the Bajorans are just, have a huge hatred for the Cardassians, which is somewhat understandable from, you know, what they experienced. So,
Yeah, this is one of the episodes where I really don't mind the crybaby
Kira.
Oh, it's warranted in this episode.
This is acute. You become acutely aware of why she's so hell bent against the Cardassians. So later on, Kira is sitting at down at one of the lounge areas, and Sisko comes down and says that he's going to let Odo take over the investigation, and she pleads with him. that.
He really should have said no to her. Yeah. But apparently he went behind her back and already put Odo in charge, because at the end of that scene, he's like, oh, Odo, you're not in charge of this anymore.
Right, right.
But I just, like, he should have said, I mean, like, I understand he kind of had to say yes, but at the same time, it's like, you're giving the least objective people.
Yeah, she does not seem objective.
In charge of this.
She seems hell-bent on proving that he's guilty.
Yeah, because they had that scene with Jadzia, too.
Right, right. And I kind of, that's the kind of thing that bothers me. The only other thing I wanted to mention is that this is kind of a knock for the Kira. And this scene where she's sitting with Sisko at the restaurant, the way she talks about the atrocities and stuff like that, it's a great lines and delivered. Something about it, I think it was a little bit overacting. I don't know if that's me. Did you feel that way?
I don't know. I feel like she was solid, like, really the entire episode.
Something about it, I just wish she would have, because there's, I guess what it is, she started to, like, she looked away, like, when she was kind of going to cry a little bit because she was telling about Gildetep, and then she comes back and talks to him and looks back at him. I would kind of think that, I kind of felt for me, and this is just that she would have been maybe not crying, but she's more angry and fierce and, like, maybe staring directly at Sisko at that point.
Well, but
that's my take.
But didn't she also just have that doubt with Dax, though?
That was just before that. I mean, that comes after that.
Oh, it was after that. Okay, so.
But, and that's just me. You can totally hate me on that one, but that's that.
No, I mean, it's that everyone's, you know, it's up to different people's interpretations. I thought she was really solid throughout the entire episode. I know on the best, you know, you didn't like that I didn't like Progress,
right?
But that was like what, season two or three, and like
I think it's season one.
It was season one. That's right. It was earlier this season,
right? Right.
But I mean, the acting that she does is so much better, like in this episode, like around, except for Sisko, you mentioned that earlier, like everyone's like ringing at the 10 and Sisko's around 5.
Sisko's a very sedated 4 to 5.
He's like, he's like me. He's like, oh no, he's Shakira's doing her, the Cardassia thing. Again.
I better go take a Xanax.
Or three.
He's on 12 Xanax. He's passed out on his couch.
Oh my God, Gildetep's calling me. Kira's calling me. The other Bajorans are calling me. And no, I'm just going to go to sleep.
So, Bashir basically confirms that, yes, this guy does have the syndrome that is
linked to the labor camp.
Labor camps, right. So Kira goes and confronts him. He goes, yes, I was a file clerk. I was nobody, just a simple file clerk, and I was there, and I didn't see any atrocities. And, you know, she's like, you're just a file clerk, you know, kind of.
You're not going to like it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I taught filing. This is another thing that I thought was really interesting. I'm like, really? Like, a military academy, he's teaching filing. Like how long can you, like.
I don't
how
know.
How long can that course be?
Not long, but if you're really good at it.
Is it like a full semester?
If you're really good at it, they might want you for something like that. You know?
Sure, sure. But like, can you teach on filing for like an entire semester? Like, I just don't. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. So the whole thing is that she's trying to unravel who he is, and they're trying to even get files for Gildetep and find out who, you know, like, was he there? And apparently, like, the Cardassians had raced tons of their
all the
files.
Evidence of the, except for one photo,
which is, this was a hard one for me, how they could reconstruct his face behind somebody.
No, like, this is actually really cool. Like, in Star Trek in the Darkness, where they had the camera where they were able to, like, pan around people.
Right.
It was a lot smoother because you have 3D amazing, you know, technology nowadays.
Right.
Like, but back then, it's like, it just watching it, it was like, oh, it's that same technology they're using, except that it just looks way crappier because it was.
I just don't see how you could enhance a photo and actually figure out how a face would look from when, like, literally only seeing, like, from the cheek to the ear. Like, I don't know how a computer could extrapolate that much information.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, like, the holographic things, like, apparently the holographic pictures take full 3D renderings of everything, even things that are behind things.
Right.
I mean, it looked really cool in Into Darkness how they kind of like turned around a person so you could see Khan. It was the same kind of thing here. I was like, that's really cool. Like they kind of like took that from.
No, I mean, it's a cool idea, and I know they can sort of do that with technology today, but they can't do anything that advanced. Like they can't if something's blocking a face, they're not going to be able to totally reconstruct a face. They might be able to kind of like figure out the size and the, you know, of a person or something like that.
It turns into a criminal sketch. It turns around at like criminals.
I think the face would look more like Odo's because it's like you don't really know what the face exactly looks like. So, anyways,
like it's been pressed by an iron.
Right. Yeah. That never got Odo. Couldn't get a face.
Anyway. If you like watch a season one episode, then go watch a season six episode. His makeup changed a lot. Even though it's still just like a really flat face, it did change a lot somehow.
I know it does, but I always wondered like, why can't you just like get like a normal face and just like take off the makeup? You're just trying to say that he's an alien. That's all it was, because he's a shapeshifter. He could look like anybody. He could look like a Cardassian. He could look like a Bajoran. He could look like anybody. You know,
I don't think we ever see him try to look like a Cardassian except for the time they put where he can't shapeshift anymore and they make him into a Klingon.
Right, yeah. But yeah. I mean, he could do that. I don't know why he wouldn't, but. Yeah,
I don't know. It'd be funny if they put the Klingon makeup on him and he still had all the really flat features on his face.
Right.
Like, you're not a Klingon.
You're not a Klingon. Well, and we do get that scene with Dax and Kira when she's on the promenade. She's looking out at the stars, and Dax is sort of like, you know, what are you looking for? And he's like, I'm looking for answers. And she kind of says, maybe you're just looking too much for his guilt. You know,
she's like, I want him to be something worse than a file clerk. I'm like, what's worse than a file clerk? Anything?
Right.
It's just funny.
It's just one of those things. It's just like, this is the part where I get aggravated this episode because Akira, I know she's in the right place and I know from what her experience is, but I think Odo should have been running this.
Oh, Odo definitely should have been running this because he's way more. I mean, Odo still basically was running it. He just wasn't doing any of the interrogations.
Right.
He was doing all the hard work.
Yeah, exactly. But she kept on pushing it, which was cool that she did. But the only thing is that I kind of felt that, you know, if you're just going into it, it's like if a police officer saying, like, I believe Dave Duncan is guilty of this crime, and he just hell-bent on you being guilty. He might have an inclination that you're guilty, but if he believes that you're guilty, then he's going to find shadows in every corner to say Dave Duncan is guilty of this. So
kind of like that Making a Murderer on Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. So we see it again and again. I mean, police are not perfect, but I mean, it's like we all have our prejudice and our preconceived ideas, but you'd hope that if that's your job, if you're an investigator, that you kind of be a little impartial.
Yeah.
If you think the evidence is pointing towards something, obviously you're going to follow those threads to wherever they may lead. But Kira is definitely, you know, she came into it. It's like, you are guilty.
And at the beginning, she's like, I'm doing what's right. And I'm just like, you've got no evidence. Right. You know, you've got nothing. And I love how this episode is an arc for her. Except that it's not, because she reverts back to her old self after the episode's over. And that's just the thing with Kira. Like she's Nana Visitor's a fantastic actress. I love her to death. She's fantastic. But like, I just feel like they wrote Kira so one dimensionally because like she has like this huge arc in this one episode where she goes from hating Cardassians and the guy's saying all this horrible, horrible things to her, and then she realizes that he didn't do anything wrong.
I know.
And then she goes back to like, you know, hating Cardassian just as bad as she always did.
Well, so he...
You'd think she'd be more objective.
So anyways, he says he's a file clerk, and then they get the file archives, and they're going through the whole scene of, like, where I was saying they're reconstructing the pictures.
Yeah.
And the person who's captioned in the photograph...
Goldar Heel.
Yeah, is Goldar Heel. It looks exactly like the person they have in jail. And the guy who...
Everyone's flipping out. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
And the person that is... He says who he is, which is Maritza.
Maritza,
thank you. Is a totally looking different looking person.
Yeah, young.
Yeah, totally different. So they're like, well, what's going on? So then they confront him that, you know, we know who you are.
And he goes on this amazing rant.
Yeah.
Like, just saying all the horrible things he did to the people and, like, how much fun it was and, you know, how he just took so much pleasure in it. He's just, it's an amazing monologue.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing.
Especially a guy who, I mean, like, just, he just came in for one episode and he just, like, level 10. Oh, he nailed it.
He doesn't seem to care that they're going to
execute him.
You know, down in Bajor when they have a war crimes tribunal, that he'll execute him. And he says,
he keeps on saying, like, your provisional government's so slow. Why haven't been dragged away?
Right. He says, you know, like, and he says, finally goes, you know, they're going to sentence you to death for saying all this, these things to me. And she goes,
I'll tell them.
Don't you see? It won't change anything. Kill me, torture me. It doesn't matter. You've already lost, Major. You can never undo what I've accomplished. The dead will still be dead. So he doesn't care. He's happy for what he did.
Relentless.
He is unrepentant. He doesn't even play, you know, claim that it's like, you know, like I was acting under orders or.
Oh, yeah. He's reveling in all the things that he says he did.
These are the things I had to do. So Kira's pretty upset. Now, there's something about this that we have to mention here, that he does mention to her during this interaction between Kira and the Cardassian that he knew that she was in the Shakara Resistance Force.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she's outside in Oda's office after this revelation that he comes out and says, you know, I'm happy for all these things I did, she mentions to Oda that he, you know, that he knew that she was in the Shakara Resistance Force. And Oda goes, well, how did he know that?
And yeah.
He's like, you know, you never told him that before. How would
Oda
know
starts
that?
Detectiving.
Yeah. And so that was kind of clever. Oda saw through the emotions that Kira was at. And he was like, that he shouldn't have known that information. So what Odo does, he goes and does a file check to find out if anybody's asked for any information.
On Major Kira.
Major Kira off base. And he comes to the same planet where the Cardassian that they have in custody is. Yeah. So, and he's like, okay, so.
What's his name?
Yeah.
Does he have a name?
Well, and then
Maritza, if that's your real name, well, go heel.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying the Cardassian, because we don't really know who he is yet.
Who is he?
And so he does come to the answer that
he's Damar.
He's what?
Damar.
I don't get it.
Gul Dukat's second in command.
Oh.
Who kills his daughter? He's Damar.
Oh, Damar. Right. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't remember his name. So Odo figures out that the person that gave, or who was looking for that information, was coming from the same planet that Maritza
/
Golduhil came from. And so they were looking for some information of personnel on Deep Space Nine, because they knew they were going to head there. That starts putting the lights on for Odo that there might be something wrong. He does go contact Gul Dukat again.
And Gul Dukat's like, he's dead. And Odo's like, I need some death certificates.
I need some information. And he's hesitant. And he says, this is just a Bajoran, like, smear tactic. And they just want to, you know,
make us look bad.
Yeah.
It's all like he said, she said. And like, oh, we're covering up. And then when they finally get the information, Kira's like, oh, it's got to be fake because it's from Cardassia.
Right.
Stuff like that. But during the scene where Odo's talking to him, like, I kept getting distracted by that circle that was going up and down the side of the circle.
On the screen?
Yeah, on the screen.
I know. Their interaction stuff.
It's so weird. I was like, it only moves 25% of the circle. I'm just watching you back and forth. I'm like a cat. Sorry.
Yeah, but so that he does send them some information, and this is where the revelation comes, that Golduhil...
It's been dead for 6 years.
Dead for 6 years. He never had that syndrome that Maritza has. So
he was off planet at the time.
Yeah, the time
getting a medal.
He's getting a medal for his acts of genocide,
cruelty. Like this is your your Boy Scout badge of like ultimate cruelty 101.
Yeah,
actually, he's probably on the 600 level. Probably
not tying genocide. So
right next to each other. Yeah. On his vest.
Yeah. Boy, did I jump up a level. So they're like, well, wait a second. Like, and then they're kind of like, well, did they doctor those documents at all?
Yeah.
And
Bashir has other evidence that he's got some kind of like facial reconstruction. He's taking a lot of medicine to keep his skin nice and shiny.
Right. So apparently it's used for facial reconstruction. So Kira is like, wait a second.
Maybe it's Maybelline. Yeah, maybe.
But Kira is like, wait a second. Like, what are you talking about? You guys are just like, now you're casting doubt on everything. I've just put all this work into this investigation. You
didn't put work into this. You just put prejudice into this investigation. And there's a difference.
And at the same time, you know, and then when they find out that also Odo found out that when Maritza left his planet, he basically took care of all of his affairs, like paid his, like,
made for another year in advance or yeah, something like that. Like,
made sure everybody was taken care of before he left because he was not planning on coming back.
He was planning on getting captured and planning on getting executed.
And so Kira then goes down to basically say, hey, you know, we kind of figured this out. You aren't Golda Heel. You're Maritza. And he finally comes down to it that he is Maritza, and he's
such a great scene.
And he was ashamed that he was a coward during that whole time, that he never stood up, never did anything.
Couldn't do anything. He said he cried and
hearing the scream and the suffering of the Bajoran people. So he wanted to act like Golda Heel. So when they put him on war crimes, that he could kind of put a name to the face, and that the Bajorans would be vindicated for these injustices that were given.
And he also wanted to make a, you know, make Cardassia like see.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, the whole thing, like the attention to be brought to what happened instead of just disappearing.
So that, you know, that way, I mean, he wants to like die for his people so that they can kind of be redeemed in their own way. Like he wants to like shine the light on them, but he also wants them to be redeemed.
Well, of course. And also say, hey, we made a mistake. And that's part of growing is saying I made a mistake. So,
the more you know.
So Kira decides that, you know, obviously he can't imprison this person, even though he seems pretty whacked out.
Like it's just that whole interaction where he like starts to like, what are you doing? And he starts to, his acting, you could say his acting is starting to be bad, but he's acting like he's like, oh no, I don't know what you're talking about. Like,
yeah.
Just like, it's like layers and then layers of his acting.
Yes.
Where you could say it's bad, but I'm like, no, like he's doing that because his,
I don't think it's bad at all.
I think it's amazing, but I mean, I could see some people say, oh, his acting's getting bad there because he's like, but he's, it's just because he's trying to like deflect and he's,
I think he's so,
he's so caught.
He's so on and he's so in that moment. It's great.
It's amazing.
So Kira releases him with Odo and they're walking down.
Odo is the worst bodyguard ever.
And, The town drunk Bajoran who was released some time ago just comes behind him, goes Cardassian
with a shiv,
and just stabs him and kills him. Which they can't beam him directly to the infirmary, and Bashir can't save him.
Okay, and he's the town drunk. How is he going to one shot a guy with a knife? Yeah. I mean, like,
we don't know how many dark alleys are in Deep Space Nine.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just you'd think that, you know, A, you're drunk, so you're not coordinated, and B, people.
Damn,
can get
Cardassian.
He'd be more likely to stab himself, but like Odo doesn't see him walking up behind him like with a knife. Like it's and usually some people can survive multiple stab wounds.
I figure he's an older guy. He is sick, but still kind of.
He was dead instantly as soon as a dagger was in him. I was like, oh, that's kind of sad.
It's a little bit like, okay.
Like if the guy shivved him like five or six times, like okay, I get it. But like
that would have been cool. Like, you went like, and just stabbing the hell out of him, you know, and like, no, what are you doing, you monster?
I mean, that would have been a little bit more realistic, you know, like him being dead, like if he's got, like, you know, multiple stab wounds. But then again, like, death is weird and, like, flexible and not flexible at times in Star Trek.
I know.
Code of honor. We revived someone from being totally dead. Oh, this guy's just been stabbed. We can't do nothing for him.
Well, obviously, Bashir is no Beverly Crusher.
She doesn't like getting raped. He doesn't like getting raped by a space alien.
Well,
with green eyes.
He doesn't know what he's missing. And Kira's last thing, she goes, when she goes to the town drunk there, he says, why? He wasn't our heel. Why? And then he goes, he's Cardassian. That's enough reason. Mitsuru is already dead. And Kira says to him, like, no, it's not.
Oh, it's so good.
And
so good.
It pretty much ends right there. So,
like, this is why I think Kira should have, like, totally been different from this point on.
Here's my thing, is that it doesn't... Kira's good because she's not... She doesn't have... She has a prejudice, but it's not, like, a blinding prejudice. So she doesn't trust Cardassians, obviously. Mm-hmm. She has a lot of, like, baggage with the Cardassians. But when, like, Maritza is found to be who he is, and he's not... You know, the actual war criminal.
But she does like a total 180 in this episode, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, no, but it doesn't mean that the next time she runs into our Cardassian who might be, you know, a bad guy, she's not going to be like, oh, okay, you know.
Well, but I mean, there's multiple episodes like this where she like has to like overcome a prejudice, and then the next episode she's prejudiced again. Like the one where she gets turned into our Cardassian.
No, I know.
Yeah. And that one, she's like, oh, you captured me. And then she actually gets on really good terms with the guy who's like her fake father.
Right, right. Your thoughts on this episode?
Oh, this episode is just brilliant. I honestly cannot believe this is season one of Deep Space Nine.
It's a powerful episode. It's very powerful.
So good. Like I said, I watched this episode twice today because it was so good. Aaron heard it was still playing as he was like coming up the stairs of my apartment.
Just wrapping it up.
And it was just like, he's like, are you just now watching it? It's like, no, I'm watching it again. Yeah. It's so good. I hadn't seen it in probably a year or so. So, definitely really nice coming back to the episode. Super powerful episode. Like I said, everyone's got it turned up to 10 as far as the acting and performances goes, except for Sisko at a cool 5. Oh, that Xanax.
Not the Xanax.
It's really, really solid episode pretty much all the way around. I mean, I do have those couple little grievances, like, really, that one stab killed them, and then...
Could have been, like, a poison blade or something.
Maybe.
Maybe he's like...
Where's the drunk getting poison? Is he getting it from Quark?
I imagine Quark, you can get a lot of poison blades.
That's true, I guess. And then the one time you see Morn, because you always see Morn, Morn's in that crowd standing around the dead body, which is great.
Yeah,
just always got to have some Morn.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the that's the only place you get the syndrome. I'm a little bit, really? But, you know, I mean, those two little nitpicks, I can't take down such an amazing episode.
Yeah, no, it's great.
What about you?
I think the acting's great. And besides that small part in that scene with Kira, I think she did great. The guy who plays Maritza is just so phenomenal. I mean, I understand why the episode's called Duet, because obviously they're bouncing off each other back and forth, and it's perfect how well they do it. So it's so great to see them interact, and her, not, I don't want to say vindictiveness, or just her,
I mean, there's a lot of close-ups in this episode.
Yeah, but her...
So it's like she's acting, like, just through her face, like, half the time. And it's just...
Yeah, it's coming right
very
through.
Believable.
You have a very strong intensity from Kira and...
And Gildor Heel, like, or Maritza. He's got, like, a lot of his scenes are very close-up on his face,
close-ups,
too.
Close-ups, too, and he's got the makeup he's got to work with, which is good because he emotes a lot through his eyes. But then not only that, the story is so well-written... that we have, like, all these little twists and turns of who the character is. And, like, you know, first he's, you know, he's just a traveler. Now he's a file clerk that was at Guild du Tap.
Now he's the scourge of the Guild du Tap.
He's the war criminal who organized the whole thing. And then it comes down to he's still a file clerk. But he's a broken man that's been very upset over the years of what he faced. So...
I was reading on the Memory Alpha that they could have written this episode as like a 90-minute movie. Like that would have been amazing. Like, I could have standed this episode to be a little bit longer.
I like the idea that it could be a movie, but I don't think they would do it well because this is...
It could have gotten dragged out, I guess.
There's technically no real action in this movie. I mean, this episode...
And there's no B-plot.
No B-plot.
Which is absolutely amazing. Like, I didn't even realize it as I was watching it, but I was reading
usually,
the Memory Alpha.
They usually have a B-plot.
Yeah. And, like, this is one of the few episodes that does not have a B-plot. I'm like, this is awesome. This is so well done. Yeah. More Star Trek should leave out the B plot.
Yeah.
Like unification, we're talking about that. Like the B plot, like B plot. Did nothing but
it was interesting, but it wasn't.
I mean, it was comic relief, but it did nothing for.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was basically just time to make it a two-parter.
Well, and then on top of all that, so just what we were talking about is that this episode has some big cries, obviously, of war crimes and genocide. The story was actually based off a movie and a book called The Man in the Glass Booth, which is a movie about a person who was found to be a war criminal. And it's inspired by an actual war criminal that was caught. This is an SS guard, or SS, I'm sorry, not guard, but Lieutenant Colonel. His name is Adolf Eichmann. And he was basically in charge of facilitating the Jews out of the Jewish ghettos and taking them to extermination camps into places like Auschwitz. So this is like directly like related to the inspiration of that movies and book, The Man in the Glass Box, and you know, obviously they're pulling. I mean, the echoes from. Of Duet.
Yeah, I mean, like the basic story. Like
yeah, this is a war criminal. Yeah. So Adolf Eichmann was, like I said, he was instrumental in bringing all these, you know, Jews and putting them into, you know, cattle cars and things like that. And he brought, Hungary had 725,000 Jews, and he brought 437,000 of their Jews to be killed at the concentration camps. So that's what he was involved in. And he ran away to Argentina, where they caught him. Israelis, secret service.
People say Hitler ran away to Argentina.
Yeah, if he survived. So he was brought into war crimes, and then he was hung on June the 1st, 1962. So, and
I just think that's just one of the things that makes Star Trek great is like they'll draw from actual history.
Well,
and then so they can do an allegory on it, like tell, you know, like what are you trying to say? Like, you know, like it's just.
Well, it definitely is calling from that. And Eichmann at the very end, when just before he's hung, he said, long live Germany, long live Argentina, long live Austria. These are the three countries which I've been in most contact, which I will not forget. I will greet my wife, my family, and friends. I'm ready. We'll meet again soon. As in all fate of men, I die believing in God. That's just insane. So this guy who killed all these Jewish people, like hundreds of thousands of Jewish people, instrumental. That's just like, I believe in God. I'm going to meet with my family again. Like, that guy's clearly delusional. The other thing I want to just bring out was that during, this is what I always said, and I never really looked into it deeply enough, but Deep Space Nine came out in like 93.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, we had the Bosnia-Herzegovina war, the Bosnian war, mm-hmm. where there was lots of, you know, extermination, and we're seeing a genocide. And I think that rattled a lot of people because I didn't think – people didn't believe that could happen again. Like, I mean, we had – I mean, that was like 90 – that happened 92 around that time, and it stretched into the, like, early 90s.
Yeah, I remember seeing stuff on TV, like all the weapons fire happening on the news and all that stuff. Like,
and even, you know, U.S. forces got – there were some U.S. soldiers that were captured. I remember it was three soldiers that were captured through that. So we had U.S. operations trying to stop that through NATO forces and U.N. forces. But I think that rattled a lot of people. They were like, so we're having another genocide? Like, so, you know, the Bosnians and the Herzegovinians are trying to kill each other over their faith. You know, some were Muslim. Because it was after the Soviet Union fell and the Eastern Bloc fell apart, Yugoslavia kind of broke off into their own little...
Oh, yeah.
You know...
Multi-states.
Yeah, their own little, like, you know, you're part of this people, you're part of that people, but they're all kind of mixed together, so they start, like, fighting and killing each other. So that it was, like, one of the things I think we're shocked, and that's one thing I always wondered. It was Deep Space Nine inspired to kind of like say like there was a war and of terrible, like, you know, genocidal kind of type war, like on on Bajor, kind of to echo that. Like, I don't know if that's the case of it.
The Bajorian are definitely, you know, allegory for the Jews.
Who's been persecuted. I mean, you could, you know, take anybody.
I think especially the Jews, because of how religious they are. They've got the celestial temple and, like, very, you know, almost like, I mean, the alpacas almost kind of look like, you know, people dressed up from the Bible. Like, you know, like when you see Bible movies of, like, you know, Jews in their robes and stuff like that, it looks reminiscent of that, I think.
Well, the Bosnian Serbs and Bosnian Croats, you know, definitely had the same kind of thing going on, because they were like Christians and Jews, or Christian and Muslims fighting against each other.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's definitely a religious aspect. It's not just ethnicity. It's also, you know,
religious
base. So, I did wonder. If that has, I, you know, because I don't really know what the inspiration of Deep Space Nine was outside of we just want another show and let's do something different, you know.
You know, it was originally supposed to be like a even like way more Western-y in feel. Like when I was doing some reading about like the origins of Deep Space Nine, where, you know, it was supposed to be like kind of the Wild West, which, you know, they got the bar. You know, the Quark's bar,
it does do that, but then it kind of goes away from that every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, because it has the Dominion War, so it just kind of loses that aspect to it.
The Dominion War got big when Voyager started, and they basically were signed for 7 years, and they were like, we don't care what you do anymore. And then that's when it started getting good, when the studio was not meddling in with it so much.
Yeah, no, like, but I guess my point only being is, like, when they set this up, were they kind of trying to, I mean, I know what you're saying, that they were definitely echoing it off of, like the aftermath of the, you know,
World War II
and that kind of thing. But, you know, the Bosnian War happened in 1992. Like, did they start, were they reading the headlines and everyone was basically like, oh shit, this is happening again in Europe? It's like, people were like, I mean, literally, like less than 50 years ago, we just got rid of, you know, the Nazi Germany and, you know, the huge, you know, the Holocaust and all the people that were killed. It's like, how could we just even repeat that again? Like, why is that even possible? You know? So, I mean, it was to a lesser extent for Bosnia, but it was definitely, you know, I think it was like pretty shocking.
Yeah, it was still atrocious.
And I mean, I think that's why the European Union was in like created, was kind of like, if we all economic incentive of not killing each other. So
it's a good point.
So anyways, those are my thoughts on that. I always think that Star Trek is best when it's an analog to real life
and what's going on. And this episode nails that on the head so good.
Yeah, it's great.
It's very moving. Like, I think I teared up a couple times in the episode.
The acting is just superb on all across the board. You know,
we might have to do another like top episodes. This was not on my top 10, and I think this is.
Well, because I know
should be up there.
Because I know talking to you multiple times, especially with Deep Space Nine, you're kind of dismissive of the first three seasons of Deep Space Nine.
I am very dismissive of the first three seasons, because, I mean, I love this series. It is my favorite series. And the first three seasons get way more watchable. Like, for those of you who are like, oh, I don't like Deep Space Nine, Deep Space Nine is totally worth it. And once you've kind of seen all the series all the way through, the first three seasons do become more watchable because you know what's going on.
Right.
But there's still some really bad episodes in Deep Space Nine in the first couple seasons.
Oh,
It's the same thing with TNG. I mean, Next Generation has some terrible episodes in the first three seasons.
You know what they say? It's not always, even the first season of Deep Space Nine or second or third, I mean, I wouldn't say they're all terrible. They're just not like, oh, I want to go, you know, talk to somebody about it. You're just like, you know, it's okay. Yeah. You know, and because the characters aren't fully fleshed out and, you know, we're still kind of trying to find the, you know, who they are and, you know.
And then, you know, episodes where, you know, actors don't even, you know, they're just all phoning it in, like, move along home. I mean, like, they're pretty much all phoning it on that one.
Which
one? Except for maybe Quark. It's the one where they get sucked into the game.
Oh.
And like, Alan Marie, sing my tune.
No,
they look like they all want to die on the inside.
That is a terrible one.
Like, it's...
They should have stopped.
That was on my worst of the worst, part one. Like, it was... I was like, it's a bad episode. And the thing is, it's a Quark episode. And, like, I still have to name it a worst of the worst. And I love Quark.
No, that's because it's just such a terrible, dumb episode.
It's just, you know... Oh, this is not a worst of the worst episode. Sorry, guys.
But talking of worst of the worst, we've got email. Somebody sent us email.
We got the worst of the... Actually, the email is called Worst of the Worst Part 2 from R.T. Harris.
Hello, Mr. Harris.
Hello. Thank you for writing us. Sorry, it's been a little bit late. Last episode was Star Wars, so we don't want to bore the Star Wars guys with Star Trek
with our minutia.
Although we're threatening to have them on for an episode called Trek Noobs.
Trek Noobs.
You hear that, Josiah? Hear that, Trevor?
We're going to get you titty twisters.
Oh, yes, please. No, please don't. All right. The email from R.T. Harris says, I like the episode, but Code of Honor is an interesting episode. Not sure how much you know about Stargate SG-1, but you should check out the episode called Emancipation. Although it's not the same script. However, it is written by the same person, has almost the same storyline. It is also considered to be one of the worst episodes of the series. I'm not sure how much you check out the facts on IMDb, but apparently Data also uses many contractions, but I haven't watched it to verify. I didn't pay attention to the Data contractions, and I haven't rewatched Code of Honor since
I don't really pick up on the contractions too much.
Because Code of Honor is a bad episode. I already had to watch it for Worst of the Worst Part 2. I don't really want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Not so soon, anyway. But I don't... If you're... Like, apparently, the screenwriter for Emancipation and Code of Honor is a terrible writer, and you should not let him write for your shows, because he'll do something terrible, apparently.
You know, I wonder if he's got, like, some kind of, like, torch to burn or something like that. He's got, like, you know, I got a point to make.
Maybe. I mean, like...
I don't know what your point is.
I don't know if I want to watch the episode if it's also regarded as one of the worst of SG-1, because I watched a little bit of Season 1 of SG-1, and it was okay. But I just have a hard time seeing MacGyver taking Kurt Russell's place.
I never disliked a Stargate in any shape or form. I guess my problem was that
I love the movie. The show just didn't grab me for me to keep coming back to it.
I like the movie and I like the show, but here's the thing is with a lot of shows with me is like if I can't like lock in the first couple episodes, like, I get kind of like lost, and then like, let's say I miss an episode or whatever, and then I'm like, okay, now who's this person? Who's that? You know, and then I just get so lost, and I don't know what the hell's going on. And I know they were a bit episodic, but they did have running themes through them. You know,
they did.
I
do need to probably make an effort and try to watch SG-1 if it's on Netflix. I need to try and maybe
watch SG-1 and burn through there a little bit. Stargate Atlantis, and I mean they had a whole bunch of different ones, and it's all really interesting. It's just that I didn't get that far into it. Now in that episode, I don't recall seeing that. I
don't know if I saw that episode either or not. I just watched. I don't even know if I finished the first season or not.
Yeah.
It was a couple of years ago my brother said I should watch it. I tried to watch a couple episodes and I was like, it was okay. It was fine. It just didn't really grab me. And one thing really annoyed me in the show, was in every single episode. So they've got the Teal, right? The guy who's a Gua'uld.
Yeah.
And he says Gua'uld. But everyone else pronounces it differently. You've got a guy who's like, he knows what the word is and how it's supposed to be pronounced. Say it like him. Quit all having your own pronunciation for this one word. It just drove me crazy. Gould, Gauld, Gould, Gua'uld, Gua'uld. It's not that hard. Everyone said it their own way.
It's like
just,
guacamole.
I just wanted to why? They've got a guy. They know how it's pronounced. Why can't anyone say it the same way? Stop it.
That's funny. That's what would stop you from
It's like, you know, in Star Trek, whenever I get mad about continuity, I'm like,
oh, I know.
This is continuity. Like, you're in the same episode. You know the white way pronounce it, and you're saying it wrong on purpose.
I know. Continuity drives you nuts.
You're military people. You should be like in your the top military people. You should be a little bit smarter than this. Where everyone's saying the word the wrong way, except for the come on.
I'll have to look out for that episode. He didn't mention what actually episode that was.
Yeah, he did. The episode is called Emancipation.
Emancipation. Okay.
It doesn't say what season.
Well, I can look that up. It's no big deal.
Yeah, SG-1 Emancipation. Yeah, yeah. If you watch it, let me know if it's as bad as Code of Honor.
I'm assuming it's got to be pretty close. It's hard to believe that he would just resurrect that script, dust it off, and just change the names.
Adapt it a little bit for SG-1.
Do a search and replace. Every time it says Tasha Yar.
And the girl, she's blonde and she's got to get short hair. Sort of like Tasha.
Yeah. Same.
Although I think she's more attractive than Tasha.
Same tropes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Was she raised? Everyone's from Earth. So I guess she wasn't on a rape colony. Like Tasha Yar was.
She was from Brooklyn, so.
Oh, you mean Detroit.
Detroit. Yeah, I know. It's like one of those things is like, that episode watching it was like, why could this get by anybody? Like, didn't Roddenberry, didn't anybody go like, let's not do that?
So I don't understand what you're saying, RT Harris. Are you like for the episode? Are you excited about it? Like, you didn't really come down either way. You said it was interesting, so I don't know if you liked the episode or
yeah, it is interesting.
Or only you're finding it interesting because SG-1 basically did the same episode from the same writer.
I think that is interesting that the writer resurrected the script and said, yeah, I think this still needs to be explored further. Like, no.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
I don't think it does.
Especially if you're going to cast all black people and be very racist about it and very sexist.
Yeah, I just don't really get what the point of that would be. But yeah, that's definitely...
It's an interesting concept, but I'm not sure if you're saying if you like the episode or not. So email us again and let us know if you actually like the episode, yeah. RT.
I'll definitely check it out. I'm going to see if I can find that episode.
Is it on Netflix still? Because that's the last time I watched it. It was on Netflix.
I haven't seen it on Netflix recently, but I haven't really looked to search it out either. So.
Yeah, same here.
But it'll be interesting. I'm sure I can track down that episode somewhere.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anything else about Duet?
No, I think we exhausted that topic.
We love the Duet.
should we sing a duet? I see a little silhouette of a man. Got a moose. Get into its fandango. Thunderbolt of lightning. Very, very frightening me.
Galileo. Figaro. We're sorry.
We are very sorry.
We're very sorry. It's not Ice Ice Baby, so...
We left that out.
Aaron is happy.
Another episode cursed by Ice Ice Baby.
If you didn't stop the recording...
If you didn't...
All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter.
I'm sure they stopped the recording right now.
You can find us at Synthaholic Duo on Twitter. Me at David_J_Duncan.
You can find me at Blackbird2004. Please don't tweet me angrily.
Your singing voice is amazing. You can find Guy at GS Davis Art and USS Tamerlan. You can find his Witches of Flames at witchesofflames.com. Mm-hmm. He has a Patreon. Please support his art. He is a fantastic artist and is an artist for a living and does great free comics to check out. So his Patreon is patreon.com/GS Davis Art. We have a Patreon too. If you think the show's worth supporting, even though we sing badly. Men singing badly. Duet. In C sharp. Yes.
That's a hard key.
You can find us our Patreon at patreon.com/synthaholics.
And definitely go to iTunes, rate and review us. Let us know what you think. Please leave us some 5 stars, many stars, Star Trek stars up there.
Even if you don't like our singing, give us 5 stars. You can just write in the review that the singing was bad.
Singing's bad, but everything else is great. And hey, if you got any friends that are into sci-fi, into Star Trek, into goofy commentary about TV shows that came out in 1993, definitely let them know about...
Let them know about us. And I know our non-Star Trek episodes have been about Star Wars, but that's coming to a close as soon as we get Rogue One out the door.
Right.
We're going to start doing other stuff until we count down to Episode 8.
Right.
So we've got Dune coming up in February.
February,
right. We might do Children of Dune and the sci-fi Dune if we can find legitimate copies of those.
Yeah.
I've been struggling finding legitimate copies. If you guys know where we can find legitimate copies or...
Yeah, email us or show us, tell us on the Facebook page.
Yeah, like join their Facebook page, facebook.com/group/synthaholics.
Oh, it's always a gas.
Gas?
A gas. Nebulous gas.
Nebulous gas. Yeah, we post stuff on there. Our episodes, just random musings, science facts sometimes.
Sometimes.
We do find that science stuff because we think science is interesting, which is part of why we love Star Trek, I think.
And science fiction.
And science fiction, most definitely.
Yeah.
So if Star Wars has been turning you off for non-Star Trek stuff, we've got other science fiction stuff, you know, coming down the line. Just bear with us.
And let us know if you're liking the change of format or if you want to go back to Star Trek or if there's something. I mean, you know, we're, you know, here to please you.
Yes, we want to give you
a happy ending.
You're like the Borg. You're just like, you're here to service us.
Yes.
Ooh. So you can definitely email us, tell us your thoughts, because we're pretty much flying dark without your feedback. We hope you like what you're hearing, but we want to do more. We want to grow the audience. Share this with your friends. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. Share it wherever you do your sharing.
Yeah. Share it to everyone at work, even the people that don't like to talk to you,
especially your boss.
Yeah, tell your boss about things that they don't care about.
Exactly.
Did you finish those reports?
No, I don't have my TPS reports done.
Damn it! Stop listening to Synthaholics.
Well, you know, it's worth it. So
it is. Lose your job over us.
We don't make any money on this yet. So,
yeah.
I mean, no, we do have a couple of patrons on our Patreon.
Work for free.
Which helps us tremendously, keeping our show on Libsyn.
Yes.
Which is our media hosting. So thank you so much for the patrons, Dave and Holly. And I don't know who the other one is.
Mystery.
Like, it's a name, but it's not like a person's name. It's like their sign-in, so I don't know.
Like Rorschach or something like that.
But we appreciate all the donations and helping keep the lights on here. So,
absolutely.
Thank you so much, everyone. Live long and prosper.
Boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
I didn't, like, I wasn't recording for the first part of it.
Wait. What comes before Galileo?
I'm just a poor man. Nobody. I don't know. That's such a long song.
Oh my God, why can't I remember it? I've been had this song in my head. And now I can't remember what comes before Galileo.
Oh, whatever.
We'll think of it later.
And just in the middle of the show, it'll just like, it's such a horrible tragedy. He's just a poor boy from a poor family.
No, don't. I'll just turn this off. Oh,
that was bad.